It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Volume.
Colin Cowherd Podcast presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. No better place to bet the action than on FanDuel Sportsbook during the football season. There's a lot of reasons. It's America's number one sportsbook. Incredibly easy to use. Super safe. Totally secure. Super fast payouts in as quick as 2 hours. You're not going to get that anywhere. Also, same game parlay bets, live betting. It's the best. Hey, if you're new, just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. I did it in 15 seconds. Get started now. Sign up. Please use the promo code Colin so they know we sent you. Please use the promo code Colin, C-O-L-I-N. FanDuel Sportsbook app. Sign up. This is Prime Cuts, the best of the Colin Cowherd podcast. Training camps in full swing. I got a little John Middlecoff on the Niners, Ian O'Connor on the Derek Jeter New York Legacy, that documentary, The Captain. My buddy Nick Wright was fantastic. What's new? His thoughts on Aaron Rodgers and psychedelic tea. But first, my top takes of the week. So I went back about 4 or 5 years. And I was looking at the last 4 or 5 years of NFL standings. On average, there are about 8 to 9, what I would call Super Bowl teams. These are double digit win teams, 10-6 or better with a 16 game schedule. Now, I think those teams have to be, it feels like to me, a Super Bowl team should have 11 wins, be sort of, 11. And 6 to me feels like a Super Bowl team. So an elite team, very good. Then the league has about 10 to 12 teams in the middle, right, that are potential playoff teams, probably too many holes to be a Super Bowl team. And then about 10 really bad teams, 10 really bad teams. Some are, and I say bad, I mean 4 games under 500 or worse. So I tried to, before the season starts, I thought, okay, I'm going to put them in those 3 groups. Very good teams. Capable of winning a Super Bowl. There's 13 I have. This is the biggest number I can ever remember thinking. Not saying they will, but I think they could get breaks. Buffalo, Kansas City, Chargers, Denver, Baltimore, Cincinnati, Niners, Tampa, Rams, Arizona, Green Bay, Minnesota. That's 12. Then I have 10 teams that I consider can't win a Super Bowl, but several redeeming qualities. In the NFC, it's very few. Washington, Dallas, and Philly. In the AFC, Indy, Tennessee, Cleveland, New England, Miami, and Las Vegas. Can't win a Super Bowl. Could win 10 games, maybe 11. But they've got somewhere, they've got a hole. Maybe it's a coaching hole in Dallas. Maybe it's a perimeter playmaker hole like New England. Maybe it's a distraction hole like Cleveland. Or maybe it's just good, not special quarterback, Tennessee, Ryan Tannehill. So I have 12 teams, Buffalo, Kansas City, Chargers, Denver, Baltimore, Cincy, Minnesota, Green Bay, Arizona, Rams, Tampa, Niners. I think are really special teams. Maybe a hole, not several. I've got 10, I think, have several redeeming qualities. Again, Dallas, Washington, Philly in the NFC, Raiders, Steelers, Miami, New England, Cleveland, Tennessee, Indy in the AFC. And that leaves 10 really bad teams in the NFL. Jets, Giants, Jacksonville, Houston, Atlanta, New Orleans, Carolina, Seattle, Chicago. I think they're going to be awful. And Detroit. Now, some people like Detroit. I've looked at the schedule. I think they're a 7-win team, 6-7-win team. That's it. I think they play the Jets. That may be a win. So that's what you have, about a 12-team Super Bowl bubble, 10 that have a chance to make the playoffs additionally, 22 teams out of 32 could make the playoffs, and 10 that are garbage, with Detroit being probably the most talented of those teams. That feels right to me. I don't like to be a buzzkill, but when I went back and looked at the last 4 to 5 years, you generally had somewhere between 7 and 10 really bad teams, bad being 4 games under 500 or more. I think Seattle and Atlanta are next level bad. And then I think Chicago, New Orleans, Houston, Giants are really close. So Hard Knocks, this year it's the Detroit Lions is the choice, debuted last night on HBO. I'm not a fan of Hard Knocks because I think it's really unfair. If you look at the history of Hard Knocks and the teams involved in Hard Knocks, they're historically really bad. And I think what's interesting is the Colts, for the first time last year, the NFL started taping mid-season. Remember, the Colts were the team used. You remember that last year, right? And I said, I don't like, in the middle of a competitive season, in a competitive division, Titans-Colts, suddenly I've got 34 camera guys and producers all over my team. Ask yourself this. What team in the NFL melted down in the last 2 weeks? The Colts. Something can be good television. Hard Knocks often is. But I think it's a competitive disadvantage. I don't think you can put cameras around people and not change their behavior. Why do I think that? You ever gone to a game, a basketball game, an NBA game, or a baseball game, and they put up like the kissing cam and they take shots of people in the crowd, and reasonable, well-adjusted people become complete morons? Cameras affect people. You do silly shit. You do weird stuff. You're not yourself. And I mean, I think about this all the time. I've been on camera, you know, for 3 hours a day forever. You know, most of my adult life, local TV, simulcast. You could not put 8 cameras in my house with my family and nobody be affected. You can't be real when you're being taped. And I think teams get a little inauthentic. I think the league, by and large, does a pretty good job to make it non-evasive. But I keep seeing these teams. The Cleveland Browns had it. Hugh Jackson, that team melted down. The Colts had it last year. They melted down. I mean, the Colts' personality, by and large, the last 10 years, has been boring. They were crazy town at the end of last year. The owner went nuts. Carson Wentz went nuts. The coach suddenly couldn't coach. What happened to the Colts? I don't think it's a coincidence. I can like the content, the quality of the content with Hard Knocks, but think it's a competitive disadvantage. I always have. I thought Rex Ryan and those Jets teams play to the camera. Those were really good football teams. Listen, I know it's football season. Kevin Durant, about a month and a half ago, I want out. Then he went dark, didn't hear from him. So Shams Charania reported the story. Durant met with the owner, Joe Tsai, and said, fire Steve Nash and the GM, Sean Marks, or I'm out. So, you know, Kevin Durant's interesting. So over, I got kids, right? Teenage kids. And one of the things I have noticed and had to sort of monitor, and it's a reality if you're a parent with teenagers, is social media. It's got a real effect on young people because young people generally aren't married. They're a little self-absorbed. Young people don't have kids or a professional career. So a lot of time, 7-8 hours or more on the phone. And I try to dissuade my kids from doing that. I have said some of the weirdest behavior in professional sports has been from single guys. No kids, no wife, a lot of time by themselves, get off work, go to the phone. Aaron Rodgers, James Harden, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, Ben Simmons, right? Lot more time to be into you. And I think Kevin Durant, actually, we know he engages a lot on social media and is a pretty sensitive guy. Nothing wrong with that. But I think Kevin Durant's one of the first victims of social media as a professional athlete. And by victim, I mean, if Twitter didn't exist, Instagram didn't exist, the constant harping on Kevin Durant about joining a championship team in the Bay Area, he wouldn't have left. I do think he would have left Russell Westbrook because Westbrook takes the air out of the ball and Durant increasingly was frustrated that he would control the possession until the very last few seconds, give Durant a pass in the corner and he'd have an awkward shot. And there was a stat I saw a few years ago that Durant was shooting with less time on the clock than anybody else in the league when he was a member of the OKC Thunder. So I think that would have transpired, that move. But I think Golden State, the minute he joined a championship team, this avalanche, this tsunami of social media backlash that he couldn't beat him, so he joined him, I think it affected him. He was very prickly, more so than usual, and I think it wore him down. And that he didn't really truly enjoy being the two-time finals MVP. He enjoyed it very, very briefly. And everybody around him with the Warriors, because of social media, walked on eggshells. Bob Myers once joked at a championship parade about KD. It got oohs and ahs from the crowd. It's been well documented that Steve Kerr had confided with players on the team. It was just a big pain in the ass. You were constantly worrying about offending Kevin Durant. And so I think to some degree, his move to Brooklyn, which has been an absolute mess, 2 first-round exits last year, this year, it's a mess. I think he's a victim of social media. And, you know, from time to time, I don't do it much, but once or twice a year, you know, I'll go speak to a college campus and or young broadcasters, or even if it's private, you know, I always tell them, don't let Twitter produce your show. 22% of Americans are on Twitter. 78% of people are not. It's simply not a reality. And I think Kevin Durant, it's easy to be fooled, tricked, persuaded, bothered. Your anxiety level can go up. It's happened to me before. Or I just put the phone down. People are being ridiculous. I have so many filters on my phone now. I don't block anybody. I just don't see the criticisms because I don't want to deal with trolls. And I think Kevin Durant, who's been pretty famously prickly on that and sensitive to that, was a victim of that. I don't think of any of that stuff. If it doesn't exist, he's still a Warrior. Because I'll say it again, I thought leaving Steph for Kyrie was absolutely an egregiously bad decision. And I don't think Durant's a dumb guy. He knows basketball. He knows he can play. He was persuaded by social media. This baseball season turned K's into cash. Big hits into big wins with FanDuel Sportsbook. Okay, right now, new customers, step up to the plate. No sweat first bet up to $1,000. Here it is. Sign up, place your first bet. FanDuel will give you, listen to this, up to $1,000 back in free bets if you don't win. You get paid fast. It's safe and secure. Great promotions every day. No better place to bet America's pastime than on America's number one sportsbook. Download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Always use the promo code Colin to get the deal. Get you started. It's called No Sweat First Bet, up to $1,000.
21 plus and present in Arizona, Colorado, Connecticut, Indiana, and Louisiana. Permitted parishes only. Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Tennessee, Virginia, or West Virginia. First online real money wager only. Refund issued as non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 14 days. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem, 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 Arizona, 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat. Connecticut, 1-800-GAMBLER or visit fanduel.com/RG in Colorado, Indiana, Jersey, and Virginia, 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana, 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan, 1-877-HOPENY or text HOPENY 467-369 in New York, Tennessee. Redline 1-800-889-9789 Tennessee. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back, and joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddie, you know we gotta give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests who are gonna be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddie as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
He is a regular at the volume, Ian O'Connor. To me, as good a sports columnist as the country has. New York Post, also four-time New York Times bestseller. He wrote The Captain, The Journey of Derek Jeter, which, by the way, I'm watching now. And what I think is interesting about it is I heard some of the critics said, well, you got to be a Yankee fan to enjoy it. Totally disagree. I've been engaged. It makes me romanticize how big baseball was even 12 years ago. You know, 15 years ago, it feels like the NFL. These games were happening in October. And I'm like, I don't even remember the NFL story back then. And this right now, obviously, Ian, in New York, between the surging Mets and the Yankees. And out here, we have the Dodgers and the Padres in an arms race. So like you and I live in this coastal baseball cloud, right? But it does feel like baseball was bigger then in most of the country. I mean, when I watch The Captain, I'm like, I can't believe how into baseball I was.
Yeah. And listen, it's been 13 years since the Yankees have won a championship. And it feels like 30 years because the history of the franchise, the mission statement is to win it every year. Of course, that's an impossible goal to achieve, but it does feel like it's been a long time. Of course, the Mets haven't won it since 86. But I think that, yeah, when the Mets and Yankees are going fairly strong at the same time, which is a rarity in New York,
right.
It is such a great baseball town. I think New York at its core, there might actually be more football fans in New York than baseball fans, but it really is a baseball town. That's what New York is. And I think we're seeing that now. And right now, the way the Mets are playing and the way the Yankees have played the last 25 games or so, the Mets are probably the better team, which is hard to believe. I wouldn't have said that certainly 5 weeks ago, but the Mets right now with DeGrom coming back,
right,
and looking incredible, if he could stay healthy, which is a huge if, I think the Mets are going to be a really tough out.
Alex Rodriguez throughout most of the country is seen as a little artificial, right? You know, it's the celebrity relationships and, you know, too good looking to be true. You did get a championship. You get a World Series championship with them. And as I watch, you know, Jeter and A-Rod, and, you know, the relationship is what you would have predicted it would have been. Whereas it was never close. I think it's hard to be close to A-Rod, and I know him and I like him, but I think they're different people. You know, one's got a strong family and one always felt like he was kind of a hired gun. You know, he would go where the commerce was. How today, I know how A-Rod is viewed to a lot of America. How is he viewed in New York today? Because he did help get them a ring.
That helps some, but it's nowhere near where or how Derek Jeter is perceived by New Yorkers, certainly without question. And I think you said a little artificial. I would say probably a lot artificial, just based on the fact that much of his career is tainted. And you have to look at him. He's certainly a great player. He's got historic numbers. And he should have been a first ballot Hall of Famer. But the fact is that he used PEDs for, I would think, a significant percentage of his career, if not most of it. And the evidence is there that that's the case. And so comparing him to Jeter, who is looked at anyway as the representative of the non-PED superstar, I think most New Yorkers would tell you that it's night and day, that even though A-Rod did help the Yankees win a championship, Jeter, of course, helped them win five. And there was never any hint of PED use in his career, certainly. So I just think they're on different planets in New York. Yeah. You said nationally, but I think in the city as well. A-Rod and how he's sort of cleansed his image to some degree in terms of as a broadcaster, as a media personality, I've never bought into that. The people I know who are Yankee fans haven't either. And I sometimes wonder really how ESPN and other entities really treat him as someone who is embraced nationally and in New York. I don't think he is. But he's done very well for himself. I wish him no ill will, of course. But I wonder really if the people who employ him understand that. I just don't think that fans around the country really now embrace him any more than they did when he was a player.
When I watched, I've gone through four episodes so far, and they keep replaying him, so I'm going to go back. And you wrote the book, obviously, The Captain Derek Jeter. The Steinbrenner stuff, it's really interesting. When I watched that Michael Jordan documentary, the people that I was supposed to not like, I kind of found endearing at times, right? Like Jordan's bad behavior, I found it sort of endearing in a way that he was so deeply flawed, but he cared so much. And for all the Steinbrenner nonsense, the one thing I thought about watching that, Ian, is that George was so intense and hard on everybody, including Jeter, for years because of his partying, that by the time you got to the postseason and you had him riding your ass in Seattle in game 38, you know, and demanding excellence, that it kind of created a little bit of a medal with the team, that they had this sort of force field around them, that George's constant, almost beyond, it's almost comical how much he cared in June, how much he cared about the coverage, that it kind of prepped you for the postseason. That you were like, we've got this guy breathing down our neck. These playoff series are nothing. Maybe that's a reach by me, and maybe I'm too far removed from it. But I maybe I'm romanticizing it. But I thought, you know, the value was the intensity. This team was so good in big spots. Is some of it George?
Yes. Yeah, and I think Jeter would tell you that too. I think Jeter enjoyed that part of his ownership. He didn't enjoy when he called him out for partying when that was a bit of a stretch. Jeter certainly was not a party animal, and there was a headline that he hated in the Daily News when he said he didn't have to change anything. It became party on, and so he didn't enjoy that, and he had a good time in New York. It's amazing that he was able to sort of navigate the biggest and loudest marketplace in the country as long as he did without really getting involved in trouble or any sort of scandal. The very few people pulled that off in New York and beyond at his level. But I think he did enjoy George and his appetite and hunger for success, his willingness to spend what it took to put a championship level team on the field. And I remember in 98, that team, that's the best team that George Steinbrenner ever had, won 114 games, ended up sweeping San Diego in the World Series. So they won 125 games in all. But they were 1-4 out of the gate, if I remember correctly. And there was already talk of Joe Torre being in trouble. It was criminal. Torre wins in 96, gets knocked out by Cleveland in 97 in the playoffs. That was George's hometown team. So that was a sin. But they get off. I believe they were 1-4 in 98. And there was already talk about Torre being in trouble. They win 114 games that year and win the whole thing. Of course, they won it again in 99 and then beat the Mets in the World Series in 2000. But yes, you're right. George deserves credit for being part of the fuel behind that dynasty without question, and not just because he was willing to spend on high-end talent, but he did establish a culture that hardened the Yankees for the postseason challenges that they faced. And I do think, despite his flaws and mistakes, and there were many of those too, that he does deserve credit for those four championships in 5 years.
So of your four New York Times bestsellers, read all of them. One of them, of course, is Belichick, and Brady is through that book. And so we discover that Tom was flirting, you know, on a yacht with one of the co-owners of the Miami Dolphins. And, you know, I said there's so much outrage on the internet. And my take was Michael Jordan at the end of his career was flirting with Abe Pollin. Jeter immediately went into ownership. A story 2 weeks ago, NBA is going to Vegas and LeBron wants to be one of the owners. And I'm like, if you have $500 million net worth, rich guys, billionaires, one of the things they don't have beyond they can buy anything. They don't have a lot of cool friends. They've got, you know, other business people and they like to hang out with Jeter or Jordan or LeBron or Brady. And I can see Brady at the end of his career, like Michael and Jeter, and a lot of these guys, LeBron, saying, I'm not putting my money all in the market. I've already owned six homes. You know, it's like, what's the safest investment in the world? And what do I know? A pro sports franchise. So, like, I look at it and I don't think less of him. But what's interesting, Ian, and you know this well, we've got Deflategate with Tom. We've got flirting with, you know, an NFL owner. Why? He's a Patriot. We have the Bruce Arians thing where it does appear he ran him out, but he won't own it. There's a connection to Trump, which makes some people uneasy. Is Brady fooling us, or do you think it is Corey's a good guy and he's just so rich, he's a little tone deaf to some of this stuff? Or has some of this just been wonderful PR with Tom?
Oh, I think what you just said about him being a little tone deaf, a rich, very successful man who is a little disconnected from reality. The rules don't apply to him. And I think you saw that too when he ran those workouts with Tampa Bay when the union said, don't run these during the pandemic, right? And he just did them anyway. And I criticize him for that. And I do think I put something out on Twitter after I saw what went down and what the league found in terms of the tampering. I thought Tom Brady, that was a bad look. And I don't really care about the Tampa Bay part of it because that's when he's looking maybe to go into retirement, into ownership. But when he's playing in 2019, starting in August of 2019, he knew he still wanted to play more. He just didn't want to play for Belichick anymore. And when he's talking to a division rival the entire season, numerous conversations, detailed conversations, that's what the league found. Man, he is, like Jeter, the embodiment of the all-in player, all about winning 24/7. And during the course of the year, you're the starting quarterback for one team in the AFC East, and you're having multiple detailed conversations, negotiations with another team in the AFC East. And nobody seemed to care about that. I pointed that out, and most people were like, this isn't a player issue. You're not going to punish the player. You always punish the recruiting ownership group. I felt like, wow, that was really, it just hit me that here's a guy that he was all about being all in. And I find it hard to believe that he wasn't distracted at some point in the 2019 season as the starting quarterback for the Patriots when he was negotiating with another franchise. So should he have been punished for that? I sort of think probably not a major punishment, but I think for his image as the ultimate competitor in the NFL, I thought that was a really bad look. And I think most people just gave him a pass on it. I was a little surprised by that.
Yeah. I mean, listen, it's sort of like Reagan was so popular. He joked about bombing Russia. Popularity has a force field of its own. I mean, Michael Jordan, who had the first major shoe contract, that Nike shield around Michael Jordan, you can't penetrate it. He punched teammates. He quit twice. I mean, it is, popularity is a remarkable thing. And I think Jeter had it. And I think Brady has it. I mean, it's look at this. The very last year, the last 2 years he was in New England, everybody had his jersey. It was still like number one in the league. I mean, Aaron Rodgers has been in Green Bay for years, but his jersey's 20th right now. 20th. Tom's is one, and it was one until the end in New England. I mean, Rodgers is a back-to-back MVP. It's 20th. So I think I look at Tom, and I'm a huge Brady advocate. But there's some drips. There's a leak in the faucet. There's been some tone deaf stuff. I didn't even think about the practice. And I think Tom's a good guy, but I really do think at his heart, he's a good guy. I think when you get that rich, Ian, and that famous, you can't relate. And I almost don't blame you. You literally don't go to the DMV. You don't go to an airport. You don't go to the grocery store. I mean, seriously, what kind? Right. It's not a normal life.
It's not. It's not. I think he's the greatest football player ever. I mean, my dad once said that there would never be a greater football player than Jim Brown. And as an athlete, Tom's not on the same planet with people like Jim Brown, Lawrence Taylor, Walter Payton, and you think of some of the greats of the greats. But in terms of performance, body of work, and the significance of that position, he's not just the greatest quarterback ever. I think he's the greatest football player ever. So I have just a tremendous amount of respect. I do think at heart, from doing the book and talking to a lot of his friends and people who really knew him, I do think he's definitely a good person. And I just think, yeah, there have been, and nobody has a perfect career. And when you're constantly in the public eye, you're going to make mistakes and people are going to know about them. And I think he's made a few, whatever mistakes he made in Deflategate and negotiating with another franchise while you're playing quarterback for the Patriots. I had a problem with that. I had a problem with him running multiple practices when the union said, don't do it during the pandemic because you're putting people at risk and risking maybe the start of the season if we have everybody running these practices. And that was right in the heart of the pandemic. And so, yeah, but I think the bogeys on his scorecard are manageable. And he's got more birdies than everybody else. So that's why he should go down as the greatest football player who ever lived.
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back. And joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddie, you know we got to give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests who are going to be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddie as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because, God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
When your child fights sleep, it can feel like a battle you'll never win. Imagine a bedtime routine you all look forward to, where you cuddle in and let the stress of the day melt away. Welcome to Sleep Tight Stories, a calming weekly podcast that brings bedtime stories, cuddles, and comfort to families worldwide. The stories are quirky, relatable, and spark wonder without overstimulation, so listeners can fall asleep and stay asleep. Each episode is narrated by me, Cheryl McLeod, a second grade teacher, and written by my husband, Clark, an eternal second grader at heart. Tune in tonight and bond over a story before drifting off to sleep. Make bedtime the sweetest part of your day. Sleep Tight Stories. Listen to Sleep Tight Stories on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, time to bring in my buddy Nick Wright. We don't like to bother him. He's a busy guy, but about every 6 weeks, we bring him on and I throw just a variety of topics his way. If you really look at what social media is, it's a race to tell everybody you're smarter than them. Aaron Rodgers has got into this weird space where, whether it's vaccines or a psychedelic drug, instead of like licensed professionals, Aaron is giving you this sense that, you know, I feel like I'm kind of above this. And smart people seek their own opinions. They don't follow others. I tend to follow licensed professionals. And I think when you combine the anti-vax stance and the fibbing on it, and you combine it with the psychedelic drug usage, that T, it does to me, this is what happens when you get older, richer, and single. You become incredibly self-indulgent. You really believe you have all the answers. And I think some of the strangest behavior in sports, Kevin Durant, Kyrie, Aaron Rodgers, rich, older, single, don't sacrifice for kids, not married, go home, on your device. You start believing wealth makes people think they're impenetrable. And I think Aaron's gotten strange.
So here's my question about that, because I think your single, the single component's a really interesting one that I hadn't thought of. But what it reminded me of is Hollywood. And by that, I mean, listen, you live in LA and I don't listen. I'm not casting aspersions for anyone's beliefs. But I've never met in my day-to-day life a Scientologist. Maybe in LA, you've come across a few. I don't know. I've never met someone. It's like, hey, what's your belief? They're like, I'm a Scientologist. But it would appear that, I don't know, 10% of the upper crust of Hollywood is. And that to me is, I mean, it's not the same as what we're talking about with Aaron, but it's on the same tree of like, you know, I have evolved past what is contemporary thinking. Yes. And I'm on an elevated plane.
Yes.
And so point I'm making is I think some of this is how people respond to overwhelming fame. So I think like sometimes guys or people, you know, lean into drugs. With athletes, that's tougher because your body's so important, right? So then what do you do with this overwhelming fame? And I think in Hollywood, we see a lot of, like, none of the stuff Aaron's doing would be considered that odd at all if you were a movie star.
That's right.
Right? Do you agree? It would be considered really, in fact, of the movie stars, like, you know, Will Smith and Tom Cruise at different times were the biggest movie stars in the world. All of this would be very tame from what, you know what I mean? I've read their different belief structures are, right? So I do wonder if Aaron almost crossed over through the Jeopardy and through the different circles he ran in from amazing football player to super famous guy who's great at football. And in that world, I'm trying to find the right analogy, but there are, it's just in different circles, different things become acceptable. So, you know, I spend a lot of time in the poker community, right? And that in that world, what guys are willing to gamble high stakes of money on, in any other world, people would look at it, if they'd be like, oh my God, you have a crippling gambling problem, need to go, you know what I mean? Need to go see someone. But within that world, it's totally normalized. It's just like, that is just how people act, right? So if you're running in a circle of, oh, it's totally normal for you to not see a traditional doctor, and totally normal for you to try to have these awakenings, your barrier for entry becomes so much shorter, so much lower. Meanwhile, if you called me and you were like, Nick, next time the herd's off, I'm flying to Peru doing ayahuasca, I'd be like, Colin, are you okay? Like, really? This is what you're doing? But if you called me and I was like, dude, did it 2 months ago, it's fucking awesome. Like, then all of a sudden it gives you feel much more comfortable. So if you're around people that have done this, you know what I mean? That's their, so that's what I think, that's the Aaron thing. And I think I haven't thought enough about the lack of a spouse and how much that, and maybe that is, maybe the spouse that isn't as famous, you know what I mean, brings you down to a degree, you know what I mean? Makes you, I can't think of the word, but normalizes you to a degree. And so maybe that's an element of it. But I think it's very clear that Aaron is a different type of cat than we're used to with any pro athlete that I can remember of his stature.
Yeah. No, I think what women do is they hold you accountable. I said this the other day on the air, you know, half serious. Kevin Durant married, goes to his wife, I'm going to leave Steph Curry, Steve Kerr, Bob Myers, the best culture in the league, best team, for Kyrie Irving and that mess in Brooklyn. A wife would say, hell, you are. Go by yourself. Go have lunch with Draymond. Figure it out. That's what my wife would do. If Kyrie Irving was married and he said, I'm not going to get the vax, his wife would say, get to a damn pharmacy. This is a team. I mean, get it for our kids. What are you doing? But again, rich, single, on your phone, on your device, very self-indulgent. And it's not really a criticism. It's a reality. Bill Simmons talked about this. You get rich and you get older. I could point to two people in the media I know who have now reached like late 50s, early 60s, never married, no kids, no pets. They're odd. They've taken weird turns over the last 10 years. I think you know at least one I'm talking about.
I know one of them. I'd argue that guy was odd forever. But regardless, he's gotten odder. That's for sure. Yeah. No, that's a really, you know, I think that's a smart point, which is, and I think the other thing is, and now I'm just really wild speculation here. But the other thing is that comes with not just marriage and with marriage and kids is you have so much less time that you just don't have as much opportunity to fall down rabbit holes and to get into bullshit, even if you want to. Like, I don't know what you did this Sunday. I'll tell you what I did. Drove 3 hours to upstate New York to drop my girls off at camp and then drove 3 hours back. Now, on the way back, did I stop by a casino? I did, because you still find some time to get into some shit. However, that's 8 hours of my day just gone. If I don't have them, do I spend those 8 hours? I'm like, do I wake up in the morning? I'm like, yeah, let me see what's going on Twitter. And all of a sudden, is it 4 hours of YouTube videos later where all of a sudden I have very interesting opinions I didn't hold previously? Maybe. You just are so much. And for KD, you know, he's made it very clear, and I give him credit for the transparency on it. He wants to, you know, hoop, and he clearly works incredibly hard at his craft, but there's only so much basketball you can play in a day.
That's right.
He's not a weight room guy. What's the rest of his day? Playing video games, hanging out, smoking some weed, screwing around on the internet. And that all of a sudden, even if you're playing basketball 6 hours a day, sleeping eight, you got another 10 to just, you know what I mean?
That's right.
Whatever. And it is just, it's a very different world when you're busy all the time with things that aren't your own stuff.
Also, kids keep you real. Let's now segue to the Patriots. And I think Greg Popovich has fallen into this, and Belichick has. When you're really successful, success warps even the smartest people. To listen to Nick Saban complain about the NIL because it'll hurt parity in the sport is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life. He's lost his mind on that, right? Because you start to think empirically your opinion is just right because you're beating people, you're smarter than people, you continue to dominate people, I am better than people. And that's why it's important to have people in your life that push back. I think Popovich and Belichick have now bought into their system more than they have the reality of their sport, which is in the NFL, we used to think it was a 50-50 proposition, star quarterback coach, Brady Belichick. It now appears to be about a 70-30 proposition. Like, we know Andy Reid is brilliant, but you're going to lose in the first round, and then you get Mahomes, right, and you're dominant, right?
Yep.
So Belichick now is using a special teams coach, a defensive coordinator, and a cornerbacks coach to coach his offense. And I think, like Popovich, success has given him a belief, and success does this to a lot of people I've met, is that he's so powerful, so wealthy, his legacy is set that nobody will go, Bill, you've lost your mind. In an era with a second-year quarterback, in an offensive pivoting league, he's using a defensive coordinator to call plays. It's insane.
Of course it's insane. So here's my question. My question on this is, because I think there was a turning point in the Patriots season last year. I think it's very clear. It was that stupid Buffalo windstorm game. They won it. It was Belichick, to me, doing something very odd that seemed to be against anything I had seen him do in his career. He was always about winning this week. Not, you know, we're on to Cincinnati, not worried about anything else. And it felt like that game he wanted to win. What he really wanted to do was win a certain way as a giant middle finger to everyone who thought he lost his fastball. I'm going to show you that in 2021, I can win a football game without throwing a pass. And they threw three, and one of them seemed like Mac Jones audibled into. And the reason I say that was the pivot point is Mac was a different player after that. They went 1-4 the rest of the way. Mac had one decent game, was against the Jaguars. Every other game they lost by multiple scores by an average of 15 points. And it seemed like that messed with his confidence. But it seemed like Belichick was trying to, after Brady had won a Super Bowl and all this stuff, remind everyone, I'm the smartest guy out there. Does it feel at all to you like he's doing something similar right here? Like, oh, you think I needed Josh McDaniels? Well, how about I don't replace him? And how about what would I bring in are two guys who used to work for me. Then they left. They failed. They were defense and special teams, and I'm going to win with them. And I don't think it's going to work. I think this is about like proving a point to the world that the part of it that I don't get is he doesn't need to prove it. No one argues about who the greatest coach ever is. With respect to Bill Parcells and Vince Lombardi and Walsh, everyone just says Belichick. So I don't know what the chip on the shoulder, where it comes from, but it seems like he's at this point cutting off his nose to spite his face.
I always think I like to be able to see around corners, you know, be like 6 months ahead of a story. Like, this is going to happen. It's fun for me, right? And so there's never been a great movie with a bad ending. There isn't any. It doesn't exist. There is no great novel with a lousy final chapter. So I've said this. If Andy Reid can sustain his health and coaches for 7 to 8 more years, and Belichick never gets over the turbulence, the league clearly pivots the offense, and Andy Reid wins 2 to 3 Super Bowls with Mahomes, the argument for best football coach ever is going to feel a lot like LeBron and Michael, is that Andy Reid got to Super Bowls, multiple quarterbacks.
Yeah.
He won in the AFC. He won in the NFC. He won with different owners. Belichick fired, didn't work. Got Brady. Brady left, didn't work. Is that as the league moves to offense, if Andy coaches for 8 years, he's going to have 8 really good years. Just 3 Super Bowls. That'll give him 4. We are going to look at that greatest coach ever argument. Andy is the single coach who's always given Belichick. We'll go to head-to-head meetings. You know, he's already got his number. What happens if he goes 4-0 the next 8 years against him? 3-0. Do you think I'm nuts on that?
No, well, I think that it's hard to square with the fact that I'm pretty sure you're going to pick the Chiefs to miss the playoffs this year. I'm not certain if you've done that yet, but I would. I mean, so I'm not sure, but I don't think you're nuts. Here's what I think. I think Belichick is obviously miles ahead in the race. I think Bill needs to make the race unwinnable for any other current coach one more good playoff run. I don't think he needs to win a Super Bowl. I think, though, if he were to make the AFC championship game in the next 4 years, I think that's enough to make it to where he is two laps ahead of the field.
Impenetrable.
And even if Andy does, impenetrable. Because I don't think Mac Jones is that good. I think Mac Jones is fine. I think he is. I think his ceiling is Ryan Tannehill. I think it's like, hey, can you be that guy? And I think everyone knew that. And, you know, my buddy Kevin Wilds on the show gets so mad. He's like, why do you pick all these second-year quarterbacks to take a leap and not Mac Jones? And it's because the same reason he went 15th in the draft, because everyone knew he was the most pro-ready, but also thought he had the smallest room for improvement. And I don't like anything the Patriots have done, but set that aside. If he can get to a conference championship game in this conference with Josh Allen and Mahomes and Herbert and Burrow and Lamar and all that, that would be like the ultimate mic drop moment. But the flip side of that is Belichick coaches 4 more years and doesn't make the playoffs. Then it's one of those where I don't believe in legacies going backwards, but it certainly hurts because of what Brady's done. And because they like to, if he keeps going and the team, and it seems like the game has passed him by, that's not going to be great. Again, I'd love to speak it into existence for Andy. And, you know, I'm not a count the rings guy. So I don't think Andy's got to win 6 rings to be the greatest coach ever. But your point on Andy going to 4 straight NFC championship games with Donovan McNabb and then going hosting 4 straight with Patrick Mahomes, it's pretty damn impressive. And one other thing, as great as Mahomes is, and you obviously know how great I think he is, it's not like Mahomes' profile coming out of college was Peyton Manning. All right. It's not like people are like, oh, suck for luck. The Chiefs won the lot. He was the third quarterback taken in his own draft, second, third quarterback taken in his own draft. You know what I mean? He's the 10th pick. And so it's not like when he got there, people were like, oh, dynasty now locked in. Nobody thought that. And then except for the people who were practicing with him, who were comparing him to Brett Favre after a month. And so, yeah, that is interesting. I like the take. I do wonder, you said it and you said it kindly. I wonder how much longer Andy's going to coach. You said if his health holds up, like, he's had some tough personal tragedies, obviously. But if I would imagine he's having more fun now than he's ever had in his career. And unlike Belichick, he hasn't dealt with this coaching staff turnover. That's the big thing that he helps the Chiefs this year. Josh Allen lost Brian Daboll. You know what I mean? The Patriots, who I don't think are a contender, though, they lost people. We've talked about the Broncos are going to be this great team. It's a new head coach. We'll see if he's any good. A lot of the Ravens lost their defensive coordinator. No one will hire poor Eric Bieniemy. So, and so the Chiefs just keep their coordinators every year, which that continuity is super helpful.
All right, John Middlecoff, former NFL scout, host of Three and Out and the Go Low pod for the Volume Sports Network. So I watched the New York Giants. I wanted to see the first couple of drives. My takeaway is Daniel Jones is just okay. We may get a better version with Brian Daboll, the head coach. The O-line appeared overwhelmed as the Patriots blitzed, it felt like, on every down. I was saying this, that I don't think fans understand sometimes, John, that owners, more owners than you think, meddle. Eric Mangini has told me incredible stories from both the Browns and the Jets. And I think the Maras, because they drafted this kid at 6, want to see it through this year. And I just don't see it with Daniel Jones. On the first drive, he had a ball out in the flat. Any top 15 quarterback in the league hits that 15 to 15 times, flies it over his head. You know, he can hit a slant. Well, shit, everybody in the league can hit a slant. Every backup, you know, college guys can hit a slant. I feel like the Giants at this point, and I never thought I'd say this, I think they're being held back by their ownership. I really do.
Well, if you think about it, do you remember that moment when Coughlin was fired, retired, and he left the stage and he didn't shake Mara's hand and he stormed out of the room? Well, ever since that moment, they've gone through Pat Shurmur, Gettleman, and Joe Judge. It's been an absolute disaster for about 4.5 years now. And that team's terrible. And for as bad as, listen, you and I could be an owner and we'd miss on hiring coaches. That's right, really right. Hard. But to stick with Dave Gettleman in that situation over that period of time and let him draft. I mean, when he drafted Daniel Jones, and I knew people that do the SEC and go through Duke, he was well-liked. You know, he was an intriguing prospect. It's clear, right? He's big. He can move. He's got a live arm. He's not that accurate in terms of ball over life. But take him 6th overall. You know, even if you're going to take a swing on a project who's got a long way to go, Jordan Love went at the end of the 20s to take the guy 6th overall, take a running back in a league that, let's face it, is trending away hard from that at 2 overall. These guys are inheriting a dumpster fire. They really are. And this GM had a front row seat at one of the great turnarounds we've seen in recent memory in the Bills. I think everyone that knows him in the league thinks highly of him. And Brian Daboll, let's face it, before Josh Allen, what he did with Josh Allen, he deserves a lot of credit, is beyond impressive. Right. But his resume before that, you know, as an offensive coordinator, wasn't great. So I think the best thing they could ask for is just bottom out, be terrible, and be in the position, which what looks like to be a fantastic quarterback draft, and draft a guy and kind of start over. And maybe Daniel Jones, you know, Alex was more accurate, but I do think there's some Alex Smith qualities of just, there's a lot there. He's a high level guy. Maybe someone, maybe get with an Andy Reid, get at a high level organization, just kind of resurrect your career, even if it takes being a backup. Because there are going to be a lot of people that are just going to blame the Giants, you know, he got his ass kicked through Shurmur and then the Joe Judge situation. But yeah, he's, as of right now on this team, I mean, they're not set up. I mean, they got guys dropping balls, Colin, hitting them in their hand. I mean, it's just, it's going to be ugly this year in New York.
Yeah. You know, I said this about Jimmy Garoppolo is, we don't need to go on about what he is. But, you know, to me, sort of big game Jimmy. He's often very good in the 2-minute drill. He can be really good sometimes on the road. There's a ceiling, but I never worry about him getting tight. I just think he's a limited player who's an accurate thrower. But I said this, if you brought in Jimmy G to, like, let's say the Seahawks or the Giants, he's your best quarterback this year. And even if you draft a quarterback top 5, he's better than him next year. And then he becomes the third year, as you're not paying your quarterback, potentially you move him, or he's a great mentor. I don't get the reluctance with Jimmy Garoppolo. You've seen him throw at practice over the last 2 weeks. I don't get it.
Yeah. Yeah, he looks just the normal Jimmy. I mean, you walk out to practice. It's a normal, bizarre situation. What team transitions to a new quarterback, leaving a guy like Jimmy still around? Because usually that guy creates, you know, if Drew Rosenhaus was his agent or whatever, it would be fireworks, right? Get rid of my guy, release him, let him pick and choose. But from what I've been told is Jimmy does not want the controversy, and there's nowhere right now really to go, because those places, like, does he really want to go to Seattle or New York? Probably not. I think he's hoping this Cleveland thing, you know, materializes. He goes there, good team, kind of resurrects his value, and then gets some money this offseason as a free agent. I hear you on that one. The only problem is he's good enough to win you some games. And if I'm Seattle and definitely New York, I want to bottom out.
Okay.
You know, it's like in the NBA. I want to have a chance for that number one overall pick. And we don't quite know who it's going to be. Like, there's not like Andrew Luck or Trevor Lawrence for sure. I mean, there are several guys. I don't think, you know, Bryce is small, right? CJ's a little bigger, but he's not as mobile. It'll be interesting. I mean, this college season is going to play out, and one guy will kind of separate, you'd think, at the top. But there are several of them. So if I'm those two teams, I'm not messing with it. And Houston, I know they really like Davis Mills, and, you know, he's drafted in the third round. We have several guys in the league, right? Your guy, Russell Wilson, Dak Prescott, Kirk Cousins. Like, we've seen in recent memory some third, fourth, fifth round picks become very viable starters. Definitely third and fourth. And Davis Mills, big, good arm, Stanford, smart. You know, Seattle's got nobody, and obviously the Giants got nobody. But I would head to the cellar if I'm them before I mess with Jimmy. I hear what you're saying. If I was Jimmy, I would not want any part of either of those places, though.
Yeah. Okay, so you've been at Niners practice. You know, I totally understand when fan is short for fanatic, don't want to hear the truth. But I've got four different sources that Trey Lance struggles with accuracy. You've been at practice. You see it. He has good days and bad days. I think it's going to work mostly because I have such confidence in the roster, Kyle Shanahan. I've always said the Niners offense is not quarterback-centric. It's quarterback-friendly. You don't have to be great. But you've watched Trey Lance. What do your eyes tell you?
Yeah, up until 2 days ago, I mean, it'd been a roller coaster, inaccurate. You know, he's about 50% when even his backups, you know, almost 70%. So
that's an issue.
The one thing, it is. And to win in this league, even with a coach like Kyle Shanahan that loves running the ball and their defense is going to be fantastic, Jimmy Garoppolo is really good on third down, you know, and what's third down usually? It's third and eight. It's not third and one, right? So you got to throw either a longer pass, right? An intermediate route. And I do think the last 2 days, he's looked really, really good. Now, what he has going for him, like Mahomes several years ago, is he's inheriting a really good team.
Yeah.
And a really good coach. And unlike even Mahomes that first year, his defense is going to be fantastic. And offensively, the one thing with practice with his quote-unquote inaccuracy is they're really – him and Debo are trying to develop down the field. I think they're just trying to see if there's something there. Because you know Debo behind the line of scrimmage, quick screens, hand him the ball. They've really kind of forced that. And that's what training camp's for. The other thing is Kittle and Bosa are on kind of unique training camp packages. It's like, we know what these guys are. We need 17 of these. Not they proving nothing. So Kittle's not a huge part of practice, and he's going to be like, if he had practice, and he's a great practice player, clearly the Niners are like, listen, you come in great shape, we're cool, we'll just ease you in. He's going to add 5, 6, 8% to Trey immediately, right? Big target. It's quicker.
Point. Yeah.
But ultimately, what Kyle, like, I work for Andy Reid. Andy Reid loves throwing the ball. That's why he ultimately needs a throwing quarterback, and him and Mahomes are match made in football heaven. Kyle does not. I mean, his family motto is run the football. And he is going to run the football a lot. And they have so many running backs. And their offensive line can run block. At Kittle, Juszczyk. I mean, they're one of the only teams that use the fullback. And he's a fantastic player. So they basically have seven offensive linemen. I do think Trey, he'd have to be pretty bad for them to struggle. Colin, I think they're going to be pretty good. Unless he just implodes, which is always possible. Football's hard. But he's a high-level guy. He's going to make some mistakes. I know you and me agree on this. Like, picks, I can live with picks. It's just as we talked about with Daniel Jones, are you airmailing someone on third and eight when the guy's open to keep the sticks moving? Tie game, fourth quarter. It's plays like that you're going to have to live with him improving as the season comes on or goes on. But I do think there's a lot there to be very bullish on as a player.
Volume. Make sure to check out the Draymond Green Show, I brought Draymond Green into the volume because one of the more entertaining voices in sports, unique perspective, understands behind the rope, also chops up with guests like Gary Payton, Zach LaVine, Tracy McGrady. Make sure, download the Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts, only on the Volume Podcast Network.
It's Freddie Prinz Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.